Welcome to the MegaCast.
And welcome everybody to a very, very, very special edition of the MegaCast. This is not a numbered episode. This is a special episode straight for your ears. We're going to talk really softly into you. No, we're here for God of War. We're doing a spoiler cast about 2 weeks too late, but we are here to do it anyway. Tonight it is Wilco joining you because Perko's computer has officially died for all those people listening to all our episodes and how much he's talked about it dying. It officially died this afternoon.
It's finally given up. He reckons it might be the, what are you telling me, CPU, he reckons. He reckons the fan died and then the CPU burnt out today.
I'm not an expert on these things, and the Telstra technical support guy who rings me up every day telling me he's got a virus is probably more knowledgeable than me, but I think the CPU is pretty important if it is.
Well, look, I haven't heard anybody like log on and complain about their computer CPU not working.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe.
maybe. Not an issue?
Okay. Yeah, like I've seen no posts about somebody, you know, saying my CPU is not working. How do I fix this?
Okay, so maybe Perko's just milking it or complaining. Don't we don't know. But that is Josh. That is the other half of the Perko clan that is joining us tonight.
The more important.
Nothing smart in his house, but we'll move on from that.
Come on now. Tonight we're all friends here.
Two very special guests. We have Callum from the Game Train. How are you going, mate?
Hey, mate. Cheers for having me on.
No problems at all. We've had you on a different podcast for Ultra Super Mega before, so you're on Hype Train for A Way Out.
Yes, that's right.
Yes,
look at that. Still haven't played that.
You should. Oh, you've been trying to play it with your other brother.
Yeah, with Matt. With Matt. Yeah, just you know, as we spoke about on Tuesday, time at the moment is a rare commodity for us.
So. I don't like your chances now, mate. To be honest,
I like them more. I like them more because his computer doesn't work. So he's
just may as well just move back into your place, to be honest.
The room's still there.
So, Callan, we'll jump into Paul. Paul, how are you going, mate?
It's good to be back. Different show, it is good to be back.
It is good. We had Paul on Super Hype Train Secret of Mana episode a very, very long time ago. So thank you for coming back to a different podcast. Let's start with you since we've got you talking at the moment. Whereabouts would people know you from in the Australian gaming community?
So specifically player2.net.au, we have written reviews, we do a bunch of video content as well on YouTube. We've got a small Twitch presence. We don't do a lot. We probably need to do a bit more there, but mostly my video shows on the YouTube channel, Patched, The Video Games Club, and The Insider.
Oh, nice. Excellent. And I don't know who had the horn in the background.
That was a boat. Sorry, guys.
That was a boat. I was going to say boat. I didn't.
A boat.
Realise it probably
an
was.
An actual boat.
I'm near the water,
Through the window? Like, just coming through?
Yeah, it was pretty loud.
I was trying to think of that scene from, is it Ghostbusters, where the ghost ship comes through the building?
That's what
I'm picturing right now.
I was actually thinking about, was it Jurassic Park 2 or 3 or whatever, where the big shipping container like comes through the dock.
They'll slow down. Oh, they're not slowing down.
They're not slowing down.
Or Speed 2, the worst version of a speed bird.
There's a Speed 2?
Anyway, Callan, since we're... Yes, there is. It's on a boat. Callan, since we've got you talking, where would people know you from in the Australian gaming community?
So, I'm from the Game Train podcast. One of two people there, the other one being Carl Smith, my co-host. So we pretty much just do a podcast where we review games, talk about other games, you know, all that sort of stuff. Had a lot of fun with it. We've just ventured into the Twitch these days. We've been doing that for, I think, about 6 weeks now. So it's been interesting doing all that. So, if you're on Twitch and you want to find us there, just look up Game Train Twitch. It's pretty easy to find.
That's it. Go do that, people. Do it for sure. So, Josh, everyone knows you, unfortunately, but we'll move into God of War.
I got to stop thinking that we're friends. Like, obviously, brutal. Obviously, we're not.
We are colleagues. You know? That's about it. That's as far as it goes. this is our first ever spoiler cast for the MegaCast. We've wanted to do it on a few other things, but this is the first time we've actually got together as a group. So, God of War came out that day back in... It was 4th of October, 20th, was it? April 20th, that's the date trying to get to. A very, very 4th, 420 day that was very good for a lot of people. Nintendo Labo.
Is that only 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks? Three? Oh, wow.
About 3 weeks. Yeah.
That is ridiculous. So this game has pretty much got tens across the board. It's pretty much everyone's talking about it as it versus Red Dead Redemption 2 as Game of the Year this year. No other contest in sight. Callan, what were you thinking going into God of War?
I wasn't that hyped at all. Yep. I'd never played the original ones. I know Kyle was like talking it up here, so I'm like, ah, whatever. He's like, yeah, but the whole game's like one cut, you know, like there's no cuts in this game or anything. I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. But I'm like, should be all right. And then, when I started playing, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay. This is...
makes a difference.
This is seriously a good game. Like, could tell from the first 15 minutes of the game, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Paul, what was your experience with God of War, or what were you thinking before it launched?
My expectations were set very high. I'd played every game in the franchise leading up to it. I'd loved all of them, and I'd loved what I'd seen of this God of War game coming into its release. The one-cut thing, the concept impressed me, but not being a massive film buff and not... I understood that it was one camera shot, but I didn't understand how that might necessarily impact the experience of playing or viewing. So that didn't necessarily resonate with me until I actually played it.
See, for me, that's what drew me in, because I come from a strong film background. So I'm actually an editor, sort of what I do for my proper job and that. So that whole one cut thing was like, okay, this would be kind of cool in like a video game sense, you know?
Yeah, I know it was being hyped. Definitely. I just didn't quite understand it. But then, understood what it was, but... didn't understand how it might impact the experience, but once I played it and experienced it, I want every game to be one cut.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, Callan, since you've got a little bit of background in this, how difficult is, in movies themselves or TV shows, to do a one cut sequence?
Ridiculously hard. Like, it has to be so planned out it's not even funny. But there are some small tricks that you can do, you know, to make things easier. Like, I noticed, you know, there was a few whip pans, things like that. They hit a lot of the loading behind doors and things like that, like, you know, slowly opening doors. And you know, when that main room, when you select all your worlds, turning all that around, you know, loading screens are all hidden throughout it. Because that was the big thing I thought, was like, how are they going to hide the loading screens in this? Well, in a film, you know, it's kind of a different thing. You got no loading screens in a film.
Yeah.
Straight away near the start, there was some whip pans, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, there's a cut there, but they just disguise it as that, you know, flowing camera and that. I thought it was just really, really well done. And it just seemed so seamless when you started playing it, you know? I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
it does.
Yeah, just the way it was done, it was just really, really clever. But the amount of planning that would have had to go into that would have just been absolutely tremendous. Like,
it's one of those games that I want to see the making of. DVD Ultra Edition version of it, and just go behind the scenes. And I've seen a little bit, like I saw some stuff leading up to it where they sat down with the developer and they explained how everyone had to know their exact, like the actual voice actors needed, or the voice actors and stuff, they had to know their exact steps because it was one scene, one cut, and it was just phenomenal. You could see him running around in the background, he had to know exactly where he had to be on the thing. It wasn't just five different cameras and we'll just cut to the right one. The camera guy had to do so much work to get all that to work perfectly. So, but I want to see more of that.
The documentary thing is actually one of the only disappointments I have with the game, because every other God of War up to that point would have some sort of documentary video just part and parcel with the experience. You didn't have to get special editions or any of that sort of rubbish. It was just part of that experience. You could check it out whenever you saw fit. And this is the first God of War that doesn't. I would have loved that sort of insight. Not that you can, you know, these days with the prevalence of YouTube, it's not exactly hard to find that sort of content anyway.
Yeah.
As you said, there's already been a bit of it, but I don't know. Maybe a bit of nostalgia, would have loved to have seen it there.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe they'll patch something in, because I think the best example I've got is Firewatch, patched in sort of a director's cut version of that, where you could go up to different areas and go to a kiosk, and they would actually talk about how they made that area and stuff like that. So that was after the fact by a fair bit. So there is possibilities for that, but yeah, not being at launch is a bit of a disappointment. Josh, I haven't talked to you for a bit.
No, it's been a long, long time.
What was your expectations going in? I know we've talked about it a bit in the past, but where were you at?
Like, we have covered a little bit in the Megacast, but I'd played the main three games, you know, God of War 1, 2, and 3. I didn't really do many of the offshoots. What were they?
Ascension and stuff like that.
Yeah. I didn't really touch them, but enjoyed the first three, you know. And going into it, I think I was just hyped for the opportunity to totally slaughter another pantheon of gods. Like, that is what really drew me. I'm like, yes, I'm gonna be able to kill every single Norse god now. Like, this is going to be great. It's an atheist best dream, you know, like, just kill everything. I was pretty excited for it, and actually finally getting it and sitting down and playing it. It is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. I was a little bit hesitant about the new weapon, about the Leviathan axe.
Yep.
You know, when the Blades of Chaos are so iconic with Kratos and who he is and all his movements. But that thing, before, and we'll get into that a little bit later, you know, when the Blades of Chaos come back into it, but just playing all that game with that axe and the movement of that axe and how it operates and how it works and how it can change, you know, just phenomenal. Just a phenomenal weapon.
I love the axe because I had no attachment to his Blades of Chaos because I hadn't played the originals. Yeah. And it was, what I liked, it was refreshing having, like, you know, your lead character using an axe instead of a sword for once, because you always get a bloody sword. You know, it's like, all right, I've got an axe this time. Let's go. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. And just the whole concept of being able to, you know, fist fight, like throw the axe at something and fist fight and then like pull the axe back as needed. And the depth that could add to the combat, you know.
Well, like, even the puzzles where we're using the axe to and having to bring the axe back to you as part of the puzzles. There's a few that got annoying, but it was a really good little
tweak. But even just lining it up, like freezing one guy, beating on another guy until he's almost dead, and then pulling the axe back, and as the axe comes back, it kills the guy you're facing, so you can go straight on. Like, it's just, you know, just was phenomenal what they did there. I really, really enjoyed it.
I want to get back to where you get the Blades of Chaos later, because that was a fairly significant part of the game for me. But I want to quickly talk about the one camera shot a bit more in depth, and we can talk spoilers here. This is great. I love being able to just talk about whatever point of the show of the game I want to. And speaking of that, I would love to see a movie about this, or the adaptation to a movie. I would love it. But anyway,
I don't know if it'd do it justice.
I know, probably not. But the I guess the point where we were going up the hill the second time, I think that's when it really dawned on me that I'm like, okay, so going back through the story, this has all happened in one moment. Like, it was literally the wife had died, mother had died, we're taking her ashes up the hill, and everything that's happened since is all, like, we've not jumped forward, we've not jumped back. Like, you've got the sequence where you go in the light, the beam of light, which sort of progresses it forward a little bit, but that was all just one moment. And that's what sort of struck me, that all this is happening is what, like, watching back in 24 when it was a really good TV show in the first couple seasons, where it's all like, wow, this is just an epic unfolding of events. It just keeps rolling on. I guess the biggest part of it is it kept on making me want to play this game. Like, there was, I'm not okay, the end of the level, I'll stop at the end of the level, because there just wasn't an end of a level. I think that was what kept me going, and like, I don't finish many games, and that's probably, it was that camera sequence pushing me along. Besides the story as well, the story was engrossing, to say the least. But I think, was there a key point in the game, any of you guys, where you thought, wow, this has all happened sort of in one sequence, or is it just something you had from the start in the back of your head?
I was kind of watching it from the start because I already kind of knew it was there. I kind of wish no one had told me that it was going to happen like that. And then about halfway through, then you click, because that would have been like, whoa, wait a second, I haven't seen a single cut in this game. But yeah, from the very start, you know, when they get on the boat and all that sort of stuff, I was just sort of watching it, and when they get off the boat and you go through with the tree and then, you know, into the house and all that, I was just watching it like quite closely, probably up until about when Boulder comes into it at the start there, and then that whole fight happens, and after that I sort of just stopped thinking about it from there and just played the game as it was.
I think it helps massively with the pacing too, because they force you to have those slow moments where you think about what's going on, and then they just, you straight back into it again. So that their pacing it on their end It's not like I've just got to beat this boss as quick as I can to get to this level, then I'll load up the next section. It was very much paced the way they wanted you to pace, and they were always pointing that camera to where, which is a miracle in itself, pointing that camera to where you needed to be looking, and they used that camera was pretty much the third character, yep. is the way I looked at it. So
the way I saw it was that Kratos was always there, always present, you know, throughout the entire journey, you know. While in, you know, other games, you know, it cuts away to like the villains doing something or something, you know, like you're always sort of connected there with him and Atreus as well, you know, throughout that entire experience. And I thought it was really well done as well.
Yeah, definitely. I want to go back to this bit I talked about, the Blades of Chaos. So we know we started with the Leviathan Axe. Did you guys think I assumed we're probably going to get the Blades of Chaos at some stage.
Yeah, I think the assumption was there. I think the assumption was there, but yeah, when you get it, there is when you finally get to the point of getting it, there is a thought, or there certainly was in my head, that we're getting close to the end of the game and maybe it wouldn't be happening, you know? Yeah. And then the way that they do it and the, I guess, the importance that they put on that action of going back to the house and getting the blades and Kratos picking them back up to use them, how much emphasis they put on that was phenomenal. That was phenomenal. Like, as soon as you were talking to Freya and she said, oh, you know, your axe isn't going to work in hell because of the cold and everything, that's when I clicked straight out. I go, oh, yeah, we're going to get the blades back. Cool, cool. Yeah. But the whole scene and the importance that was put on Kratos as a choice that he had to do that was phenomenal, I thought.
I think I'll give you my experience first and we'll cut to what you guys thought of that sequence of events. Like, obviously, your boy that you'd been playing the game with was, you know, dying and you had to go back. The way they told that sequence, like, it was very emotional for me. Like, it was one of those points where it touched me so much to the point where I got back to that cabin and the frost guys were coming at me and I threw the axe on the ground. I pointed it at a tree somewhere, threw it at that, and I just used a fist and I just went ham on these guys over and over again. And the way how they let you do that, like, it wasn't like you're in danger. You're never at any point where you're just going to get swamped too badly. But they build it up so much that this is such a significant moment in the game. You need to do this. There's all this anger with that. Then the whole dark and the fire, bits of ember coming down from the sky. The way they built that up, it was just such a desperate and angry moment that I literally, like, I just threw the axe over the side. And I just used the fists and I belted these guys till they were, there was none of them left. And then to go in and get the Blades of Chaos. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I to give you that moment again, hey, it's like a train. It was obviously like a tutorial to get back into it again. But it's just, here's a whole heap of grunts you can just wail on and wail on and take your frustration and your anger out on this moment because you're about to get back into the story again in a sec. Paul, how did you take, like, that moment? Was it significant for you when you're playing through?
Yeah, the whole thing was quite significant to me. So I, obviously being a long-time fan of the franchise, it had kind of, I mean, I don't know, everyone plays the game a little bit differently, but for me, I'd have been at least a dozen hours into the experience at that point because I'd really taken my time to go off and explore and all those sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So in my head, I'd kind of given up at that point on the prospect of getting the blades, and I thought, okay, the axe is what it is, and I mean, I was really enjoying the axe, don't get me wrong, but it gotten to the point where I just started to give up on the blades and any significant throwback like that to the older games. And then, you know, I have to go back home, I have to kind of, like, all these little references to the past, and all of a sudden there was obviously the weight of the story they were trying to tell that was kind of hitting me a bit, but also I could feel the hype starting to build up because I knew I knew where this was going. I know what this means. He's getting on the boat. I recognize where he's going. Like, I could feel the adrenaline starting to pump as well. It was this very mixed sort of feeling for me where I knew I should kind of feel quite somber about the direction this story is heading here and not necessarily enjoy this, but man, am I looking forward to this. And
I am looking forward to getting these blades.
And didn't they drag that moment out too? Like, that whole boat ride back to the actual cabin itself, it's just like, just let me get back there. Let me get back.
Well, they had to do it in their one cut, so
exactly right.
I mean, for me personally, it didn't, but again, you know, it depends on what you're feeling going into it. For me, that was that was just long enough where they didn't kill the adrenaline for me, but they just let me ride it for probably the perfect amount of time before I then jumped
That's it.
And things started progressing again.
It was like, it was a long time, but it was they couldn't go any longer. And I think if they had made it shorter, it wouldn't have, like, it was just well timed that. But it was full time.
Yeah, for sure.
I think as well, like, much like you, Paul, like, I'd got to that point and, you know, kind of given up on the blades coming, but that they almost tried to hide it a little bit. I think with when you're like, you've just got on the boat and you're going back, and it wasn't too long before that where it was said that, actually, I think it was that scene where you're in Freya's hut, where Freya says, like, this is the only place where Odin can't see you, kind of thing, you know. And then you get on the boat, and as soon as you're out on the boat, all this lightning starts to fire, and there's thunder and all of this, and
the snake gets called at that stage too, doesn't it?
Yeah, the snake gets called, person. And it started to get me kind of thinking, okay, well, is this leading into a massive boss fight? Is this like, this going to be the end and the setup for the sequel? Okay, like, you know, I'm going to go fight Thor now or Odin. Like, is this the end point? Do we actually not get to climb the mountain and get rid of the ashes? And I like that they'd done that, because that it for me, it didn't feel like a short game at that point, because I'd done all of that so much side content already, you know? So it was just the whole way that they did that was phenomenal. But the other thing I think that was really important and kind of leading all the way up to that point and having played the first three was the, and we mentioned it, I think last week, maybe Wilco, or this week on the Megacast, was the absolute change from game one of God of War to God of War PS4 in Kratos, and that 180 degree flip of his morals and the way he seems to act, but how that's resonated so well with the audience.
Yeah, definitely. You know? It's one of those big shifts in characters I've never seen before.
You know, like, but, it's gone from this character that was, you know, angry and just killing the gods and getting revenge, to a guy that's going back and picking up what could probably be classed as his worst decision, his ultimate regret in life, to protect his son. You know, like that, and having that weight put on it correctly, and the character reflecting that up until that point and growing to get to that point. Just phenomenal.
And I think the way to, like, we'll talk about it a little bit further down the track, but the way that you can see how they're building up that he's not going to be there forever. And you thought he was this invincible person, and they're basically making you care that he's not going to be there. It's pretty well done. But Callum, we haven't talked to you about that sequence of events. What did you think of that little part?
Up to that point, I had a feeling you're going to get some sort of other weapon in the game. I didn't know what it was going to be. Just looking at the skills menu and where I'd progressed to, it's like, there's got to be something else here, because it feels like I'm not, you know, I'm about the halfway point in the game in terms of where it was all sort of, you know, the beats of the story, etc. But I'm like, where's this other weapon going to come from? And then when all that started, I thought, oh, right, they're going to go back and get his old weapon, you know, which I didn't know much about. I just knew it was on chains or something, because I'd seen a few clips of the original and stuff. So I didn't really know what to expect from the weapons, but when I got them, I loved the whole gameplay change up that it brought. You know, it's like another way of fighting. You know, it was a bit more sort of longer range stuff that you could hit multiple enemies with them. You know, use it against, you know, most of the ice guys that you couldn't damage before. New array of skills with it, and then you could switch up, you know, between that and the axe, and use you know, your super moves and all that sort of stuff to dish out like tremendous amounts of damage, which is especially helpful for fighting those damn Valkyries.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay. Man, those fucking Valkyries.
But the whole build-up to it as well, like you all were saying when the sky changed, like, that was awesome. Like, that was like such like a... I guess a change of mood in the whole game as well up to that point, because it had always been like, you know, him and his son journeying up the mountain and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, you felt like, sort of, that he was just about to just lose it, like, you know, back in the old games where he was just raging and all that sort of thing again. So, yeah, it was just a really cool build-up to that scene and all that, and, you know, seeing what's under the house and that. It's like, all right, yep, that's the weapons, cool. Gets him on, and, off he goes. It was awesome. And then, yeah, going into Helheim from there, and that was really cool as well. And I really like that place, actually. That was fun.
I do have to say, though, like, As much as I'm saying that the Blades of Chaos are a really, really cool weapon and I like them, even after I got them, I did find myself, even for the Valkyrie fights, falling back to the axe.
Yeah.
I just felt like it was a little bit more versatile as a weapon. Then you could do a little bit
the
more.
The blades were better for mobs, and the axe was better for a boss, is the way I felt it. But I went to the blades because I just love them.
Yeah, I found myself defaulting to the blades from basically that point onwards, using the axe only when I needed to, and that was, you know, some of the puzzles or whatever.
I switched constantly, especially for the Valkyries. You know, I'd set stuns up on both and all that sort of stuff.
It was good because you'd recharge your super attacks or your ultimate attacks quickly that way, because you basically use one or use a two on one, and then by the time you're back to the other, they'd be ready. And you could, like you said, you could dish out heaps of damage. But yeah, blades were my favorite from then on. That's what I meant.
When it comes to the blades and the introduction of them, and then this really requires eagle-like eyes, did any of you spot them within the first 15 minutes of the game?
No.
So when he tucks...
No. They were there, I assume.
When he tucks Atreus down into the little basement sort of part of the house when Belda rocks up, you actually... And the camera kind of holds on it for half a second longer. Like it kind of sticks there for a moment and then continues. So it's clear they were trying to nudge you in that direction. You do actually see them sitting there. So I kind of... I knew they were present, and I considered that maybe just to be a tease or a little bit of a nod to existing fans. So it was still... That's kind of what had me in a bit of a spin the whole time, because I knew they were there, I knew it was possible, and it had been so long and they hadn't introduced them. I'm like, okay, enough for me to give up, and then finally they dropped them on us.
Yeah, well, there's never ever reason that you're going to go back to that cabin until Atreus falls ill. And the funny part was for me was I was going really late into the night. It was a very long session. I'd got up to the room where you go in to where Thor's brother turns up and the Atreus actually gets ill. So I went into that room and went, nah, that's it for me. I've got to turn it off. And then obviously I came back the next time I played it to that massive big sequence. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm glad I did turn it off. Yeah. Otherwise I would have been in bed like 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to sleep that night.
No, exactly, because it was so profound. It was good.
I did that scene where you fight Thor's sons, and then I went back because that's when you get the pick or whatever it is.
Yep.
You can get through the doors. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think I did the first Valkyrie fight. And like this was, and much like you, it was a late night because I did that first Valkyrie fight. I'm like, hell yeah, that's cool. Oh, I'll just continue a little bit, you know, get to the next little section because I just want to see what happens now. And then I went into that and I went to bed after I'd picked them up. And I'm like, how, like, I can't sleep now. Like, I've got to go back and play it, right?
Oh, it's not amazing little sequence. And that was probably one of my favorite sequences of the game. What's the next one you guys want to talk to, Paul? You've got another significant moment, or do you want to get onto some other spoiler parts?
For me, it's one that kind of happens after the credits, so I figure we'd probably save that one till a little bit later.
Yep, no problems. What about you, Callan?
In terms of what specific scene, or something from the game? Or...
Oh, just anything from the game. What stood out for you the most that you really wanted to discuss?
Something that stood out for me was that you never see Odin, and he is mentioned so much in that game, and... Mm. I was a bit disappointed that we never actually even just get to see him once, you know? Like, I guess they build him up as this, you know, they are building up as like a trilogy of games or whatever. But to have a character mentioned that much and you just don't even see him once, it was a bit, okay, you know?
Yeah, but even then, it's the same with Thor, though. They do mention Thor a fair bit and you don't...
Yeah. Yeah, that too, exactly.
Thor and Odin are pretty much central characters the whole way through. And it's sort of almost to the point where is Thor and Odin going to end up being good or bad? Because obviously with the big reveal at the end that he is Loki, it's like, well, shit, how does Odin and Thor fit into this game from here going forward?
Yeah.
That spun me around. Because I was thinking, okay, well, it's going to build up, the second one's going to be about going and taking on these guys, and then the third one will be about finally finishing off the deal. But then I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense now. So I'm really intrigued on where they're going to take it from
here. I think in that regard, and maybe it does still culminate, let's suppose that we have three games, even though Corey Barlog's kind of gone, well, I've got enough content for five.
He's written two. He's written two completely.
Let's ignore that, because that's not
the
news,
idea was
anyway.
He got halfway through one and then wrote the second one and then went, oh, okay, well, I've written two. I may as well keep going.
Yeah. It's only my gut feel, but the reveal that, you know, T has been to all these other realms, he's been off to see the Greek gods. He's been off to Egypt. He obviously exists with the Norse. I wonder if, rather than, you know, when this trilogy or whatever it is done, we end up bouncing off to somewhere else as Atreus or Kratos or whatever, maybe we actually see through the course of this second and third game, we start to see a little bit of cross-pollination. We actually see him, potentially Kratos at some point for some reason, even though the gods are all dead, maybe he has to go back to Greece for some reason. Maybe he does intersect some way, somehow, with some of those Egyptian gods. Like maybe there's a little bit of crossover there, so all of a sudden it's not a game where it's really centrally focused on just Thor and Odin, and perhaps those worlds connect somehow.
Yeah,
and we actually, maybe
like Odin and like Ra get together and like form an alliance to kill Kratos because Kratos is just killing everyone.
Yeah, potentially, because I mean he is ultimately a threat to all gods, no matter the variety. So,
the way I was kind of looking at it was one of the big things that Kratos was obviously trying to pass on to Atreus or Loki, whatever you want to call him, was the fact that being a god means you have to be better, you know, like
with
basically with great power, great responsibility, you've got to be better and be better than me kind of thing. So I just had in my head this thought that they're trying to angle Kratos as that he's still the god of war, but he's like that almost benevolent kind of god, and that's what he's trying to pass through his son. And
well,
when you think
back, that
was
the whole big sequence of Tyr being also the god of war, but yet he did it without actually spilling blood.
Yeah,
unless it was,
and that's kind of what I was thinking, because even thinking back, you know, through the first three, that the Greek pantheon of gods were still pricks. Like they were pricks, you know. And it's coming out now that the Greek gods are freaking pricks as well, you know. So maybe that's where they're going to go. Okay, well, Kratos is going to go and basically be that god of balance almost, you know?
Cleansing someone.
Cleansing them, showing them where they've gone wrong or something
so
like
do
that.
You think
that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Kratos will be a character that will go on for many, many games? Or do you think we're leading up to the end of him?
I don't think it's going to be many, many. I reckon he's going to, like, in the next trilogy, he's going to die, and I think we're going to start playing as Atreus. And we're going to see a character of Loki that is different to everything else that's portrayed to us currently in pop culture and the media.
Oh, I could...
So you think he's going to get through the next couple of games alive still?
I reckon at the end of game two, he'll be dead.
I reckon he'll last until the end of game three. I reckon I sort of got my own theories where the story's going to go. I feel that Loki or Atreus or whatever you want to call him will start to sort of swing evil in a way, you know, turn against Kratos. Maybe through the second one, and then in the third one, you know, he's like on the other side, but then, you know, stuff happens, you've got to fight him, and then he ends up killing Kratos right at the end, but then realize, shit, what have I done, you know?
Yeah.
Killed my own dad sort of thing, all that, you know? And then you continue on Atreus in the new trilogy, whatever that might be, God of War Egypt or whatever.
Yeah.
God of War Egypt.
I don't know.
God of War Origins.
Yeah, we'll go all Assassin's Creed on it.
Yeah.
I honestly see the point where halfway, like sort of the end of Act 2 of the next game, is that's where he will end. And
that's where he dies, yeah.
And then the last sequence will be playing as Odin, and maybe even if Thor, and then sort of, it'll be facing against Odin and Thor, and then in the third one you'll actually be working with them, and that then you'll be having that Thor / Loki double play in the third game. That's what I'm not very good because I don't know the previous three, and I don't know Greek mythology very well at all anyway. But
I mean, the idea of Kratos dying at the end of number two is certainly something that's crossed my mind. And if you know, supposing that's the case, then I guess what we have to expect of kind of an overall theme with the sequel is that it's going to be about Atreus really having to grow up and step into that role.
Yeah.
As was mentioned a moment ago, maybe he does become really evil and you're kind of fighting that, and maybe wrestling back at the very end, just as Kratos has a very honourable death. Who knows? But it's clearly going to be about the growth of Atreus this time, whereas what we saw in this most recent game is about how Kratos has grown as a human, or god, I guess, and developed and the changes he's gone through, whereas, maybe it's more about the changes that Atreus / Loki goes through in the follow-up.
And I think,
unless it's the biggest double play in history, there was just so many references to a god being killed by his son through that, by Mjolnir, by Freya, by
the mural.
Just about, everyone. Like, the mural at the end was obviously the big bit, but they just hammered it home so many times that I'm like, well, this is happening sooner rather than later, because they've built it up and put so much effort into it. But then it could be a double play where he gets away with it. But
well, that's what I'm thinking. The emphasis I feel that they're really going to start putting on is Kratos breaking that pattern, you know, with Atreus, because that's stopping that, because Kratos killed his father, you know, and Atreus now knows that and
well, I think the big part for me was then obviously Freya being unveiled as mother, and then wanting to sacrifice herself but not getting that chance was. And you can see almost Kratos going, I can see where this is going to go.
And maybe you're right. Maybe it is the veneer you fight next time, and not the Asgardians. You know, maybe that's what it is. I think it is going to revolve around the concept of Ragnarok, though. The next game.
Obviously, the end of the game, that you come out and after the reveal of Loki, and they basically build up the fact that Ragnarok is now happening sooner, a lot sooner rather than first predicted, and the world is changing because of his actions. So that's what I thought the second game was going to be about. Is that anything from you guys on that?
I think it's right. For some reason, I haven't gone back and looked at my Greek Norse mythology lately, but I'm pretty sure that even in the mythology, Ragnarok is started when Loki does kill someone.
Yeah, so...
And I think it is one of Thor's sons in the mythology, isn't it?
Yeah, so the mythology is that Ragnarok begins when Balder is killed.
When Balder is killed, that's it.
And he's, in the mythology, he's killed by Loki, and that's kind of when they first, essentially, without explicitly saying it, those who kind of know the lore at that point, that's them saying that Atreus is Loki at that point. Or at least, like, he had a hand in it, and even though Kratos kind of did the job, he was in part responsible. He exposed the vulnerability with the mistletoe. The mythology says that it's all begun because Loki kills the one who could not be killed, essentially, and then kicks the whole thing off.
Yeah, okay, so it's pretty, like, that's, I'm assuming, the second game, and working out a way to stop it. But they did play on that whole Ragnarok thing a lot of the way through the game as well. So, I'm just so excited. I've never been this excited for a God of War game.
Like, I've got to say, though, I want to point out this one other scene that really got me in the game.
Yeah.
And I remember it because I was at Maddie's place. I was over at his joint because I think my wife Emma had gone out to the movies with Matt's ex Jess and we were looking after Seth, and Seth had gone to bed, so I'd taken my PlayStation over, and we had two TVs set up in his room. He was watching on one, and I was kind of sat behind him playing. We're both playing God of War. We took other games over, like we took A Way Out over and everything with aims to play that. We didn't. We played God of War. But I watched him, the first dragon fight that you come across.
Oh, yeah.
Like the dragon fight in the story, not the optional stuff, the actual story dragon fight.
Yep.
And God of War has always been one of those games that's been way out there, but Jesus Christ, like that scale. Was out there, man. Like, just the scale of it and how rant, and but it was funny. It was almost, because it was so out there, it was funny. You know, the way that he kills that dragon, and you know, the mouth falls down open around him and all that kind of, just phenomenal fight.
Yeah, the fact that you have to fight it going up. And then all of a sudden it seems like, okay, it's run away, but then, no, you go after it as well. I wanted to quickly touch on a point. Mjolnir was bloody, and the dwarves were amazing, especially in that sequence. Like, they brought so much comedy to the actual game to break up the craziness and the heaviness of this game.
Yep.
I think without those two, especially, I didn't realize we were going to get a third companion along the way, and I completely forgot when I mentioned the camera was a third companion, but Mjolnir is just gold, especially in sequences like that. Oh, he wasn't in that sequence, that's what's going up to get him. So, but yeah, the dwarf was there, that's right, because he couldn't hide from the dragons.
The whole supporting cast was phenomenal, you know. But you talking about the humor in it, I've got to say, like, having Christopher Judge as Kratos, and thinking back to his role in Stargate as Teal'c, and how dry he was in that, right? And how dry that they've made the character of Kratos and in this, and some of those liners, one line is that he just drops, that are just deadpan dad jokes, and some of the I actually laughed. It was hilarious. Perfect choice.
Oh yeah, he was definitely a perfect choice for that. Yeah, that dragon sequence was amazing. I think that, like, I was about to talk about the boulder fight sequence at the end. I thought that could have been better. I think that was probably a little bit of a letdown.
The first one was awesome, though, the first boulder fight.
Yes,
the
first one felt like it belonged in an anime, maybe a Dragon Ball Z fight or something like that.
Yes. And especially that with the one camera. Like, you're punching people, and you're getting punched, like, halfway across valleys. And the camera's just panning with you perfectly. Like that was almost the fight of the game, and it was at the start, which is a letdown.
Well, and that's the other thing I think too is we've spoken about the two fights with Boulder and the dragon, right? And the first Boulder fight and the dragon fight are the real standout boss battles in that.
Yeah,
and that's kind of it, you know. And coming from a pedigree of game where they had some pretty damn sensational boss battles, to really have those two. And the other ones are a bit lackluster. I think,
like, the Ancients, they were a bit like, you had to, okay, wait till they're open, throw the axe.
Yeah.
Pick up the stone, throw the stone, repeat. And the boulder fight at the end was whatever color he is swapped to the other weapon.
Yeah.
And you had to swap so quickly, use the arrows. You had to use everything at once, and they forced that on you for so long. And I just was like...
Yeah, the final one with Boulder was very... scripted as well. Like, you this moment where it's kind of a semi-cutscene thing and it takes control from you. You come back and you got full health again. Like, that was designed so you could win. But at the same time, when it comes to the boss fights, I actually feel like, I mean, previous God of War games certainly had more of them. But when I think about God of War 3, I think about Poseidon at the beginning and then Zeus at the end. And I don't really think about what happened when I was with Hades or those sort of, like, they were kind of throwaway sort of ones as well. And there's that same sort of trend across all the God of Wars where there's probably two, maybe three tops, really key pillar, excellent boss fights. And then the rest are just kind of a means to an end. It's just a shame that in this particular case, the one that is kind of a means to the end is at the end.
Is the end.
Yeah. The problem, I guess, is because he's such an invulnerable character and Kratos at that stage is such a powerful character, it's hard to have such a, like, a meaningful fight, I guess, when you're pretty much two massive rocks just banging them against each other until one of them finally crumbles. And I guess, and they had to stretch it out to story-wise as well, but I guess it probably got stretched out a little bit too long. And
I did like...
My moves felt insignificant, I guess, at times. I just was getting to that next point where it was going to cut scene sort of thing.
You were just waiting for that moment where he was exposed for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, I like that scene with Baldur, the second time you fight him, when he's on that sort of dragon and you sort of fly along the back of that from the mountain. And then he goes into the transportation room and you're running in there. And then he opens the gate to Helheim, you'll go flying through there. I thought that whole scene was awesome as well. Like, that was a pretty awesome, intense scene.
I talk about him as a villain, I guess, as well, and sort of with Freya, because I still believe Freya did something to Atreus when she cured him, as like she did with Miramar. Yeah, okay. That's why he changed fairly significantly going up that hill. And I hated that climb the second time because he was such a brat and because he wasn't helping me in the fights. I realized how much he was actually doing in the fight. I'm like, fuck, just stop messing me up and actually do what you're supposed to do. But that whole sequence obviously had to be there because you then felt there was something wrong. But I still think Freya did something. Okay. It was the entrance to hell that knocked everything back to normal. But whole sequence in hell then... What's that?
You went on an ego kick. Like, it just got the better of him.
That's what I thought. You know, I'm a god. I've just realised I'm a god. Like, he's a young kid.
But he makes references at the end. He actually, in Helheim, that he does not remember that sequence where he killed Thor's brother. Like, he does not remember. Thor's son, sorry. He does not remember that. And that to me went, well, he was under something because he definitely did do that. And he's looking straight at that sequence and going, that wasn't me. Who was that? What happened? That never happened. And I'm like, I think Freya put something on him to change him at that stage, and I think that's what they're going to lead to, because Freya's obviously now
the big bad.
She's not happy. She wants.
Oh, she's pissed.
She wants revenge. Yeah, and yeah, so I think that's where the second one's leading to. But that's how I read that scene anyway. Well, and I know no one else has actually seen it the same way.
It is interesting with the Freya thing.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I certainly hadn't thought of it that way. I just thought of it as the ego kick. Hey,
well, that
God,
was the point where I clicked and said Freya's the mother because she's done something's happened here, because that's just too big. That's not an ego kick. That's something different. That's something really bad.
I must say, the Freya thing and kind of where her story leads going forward does have me interested, because Kratos is very... I wouldn't say it's their throwaway comments, but at the end there, post that fight, he's very clear with Atreus that, look, she'll be good, she just needs time, that sort of thing. Like, he's of the expectation that she'll simmer down, like she'll come to understand why we did what we did once she has the time to digest it all. So I'm very curious to see what path that she ultimately goes down. Is he right and she does just simmer down, or does she become this vengeful god that could just throw the kitchen sink at her,
or
team up
or
with
do
Odin
both.
I was looking at that as a like just more of that teaching Atreus what Kratos thinks it means to be a god, you know, like, hey, this is what we did, it's a decision that we made, it was the right decision, she, you know, regardless if she comes around or not, you know, that's her issue. That's kind of what I was taking away from it, you know, we did the right thing. She might not agree with it, but it was the right thing by our standards, and that's what's important to Kratos. And that, I think that's what he was trying to impart to Atreus, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
and I'm very keen to see where that happens. Obviously, they've built her up. I sort of, like, you could almost feel she was the bad guy at certain... Like, she obviously, Kratos was so angry at her for the first part, and then you get that tilt where he trusts her, and like against all odds, and then obviously they twist it back again. I was like, ah, damn it. But it was a good little sequence. She's a good character, and like I said, Baldur was a very well put together character, especially with that Helheim sequence where you understand and they have reveal Freya as the mother, and you understand why he's the way he is. And I think that's something that we sort of, like, I finished this game the same day I watched Infinity War, and
I haven't seen Infinity War yet.
No spoilers.
Okay, we're not doing the Infinity War spoilercast just yet.
Do that later. But the reason they're both so good is because of the bad guys. Like, Baldur, you understand why he's upset. He can't feel anything. Like, there's just nothing. And he's angry at his mother for making that happen.
Yeah. How cool that dynamic's an interesting one, because you were talking before, like, when you spoke about Baldur before, you did describing as a bad guy. And maybe that was a throwaway comment from you at the time, but yeah, like, looking back on the whole thing, I don't think of him as a bad guy. I just, like, he was sent off on a job. There was certainly some miscommunication, because clearly Kratos and Atreus weren't the ones he was after in the first place.
Well, that was the sequence that he was after the mother in the first place anyway. They just happened to get in his way.
Yeah, and, like, he didn't really have any understanding at all about what those two were up to, and really they only became, you know, popped up on the spotlight because they jumped up there and got in everyone's faces and caused a stir. So
the reason I met the bad guy was because he was the way we traditionally see games is we're good, the person we kill at the end was the bad guy.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was certainly a bit antagonistic.
His actions actions were completely and utterly, once you get to the end, it's like, oh, I completely understand. Like, he was, like you said, he was there to get the mother, we got in his way. We were the bad guys to him because we were fighting him and we were out of place. So,
how good is it when he does visit the cabin at the start, though, when he's like punches Kratos in the face? You're like, you shouldn't do that, buddy. Because, like, didn't know who he
this
was.
This is going to end badly. This is going to end badly for you, sir. Yeah. And then it doesn't quite end as badly as you thought it would. You're like, that's a bit interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I thought he was very well acted as well.
Yeah.
Jeremy Davies.
The guy who. Yes, he'd done a phenomenal job of Baldur as well. So it's just a shame that's the end of him. Like, he's written off. So
I think in changing topic a little bit here, I think, you know, just talking about how amazing this game is, I think one of the other things that is so amazing for this game, you know, and considering the timeline that it dropped in and the other games that came around it, like your Far Cry and stuff, is how I can't think really of a single instance in that, and it has a lot to do with that one camera shot where it's not something you're doing isn't filling in some kind of the story, you know. Mm-hmm. Even the little stuff like being in the boat and traveling, like it's all connected. You know,
I love the fact that Miramir, like to fill those voids, Miramir will just start rambling about some lore. And I played through it because I wanted to play through it and finish it. I didn't do much of the side stuff. So I'd often, he'd start talking about 2 sentences in, someone would go, that's enough now. Or he'd go, oh no, I'll finish that story later. I'm like, oh, I actually wanted to find out what you were talking about. Damn it, how do I get back to, damn it.
Yeah, I caught myself sitting in the boat. Like, I'd arrive at whatever the dock was, and I'd end up just sitting in the boat until the story was done. Then I'd get out.
But he picks up the story at times as well, like when you get back in the boat, which is really
good. Yeah, he does. But I couldn't help myself, though. I had to hear it then and there. Yeah.
That's it. Because I'd forget it, because especially once you got out of the boat, generally you were action-packed for a fair while. I just want to touch on, the worlds. Like, they've put that tree there, and I guess they had to put all the Nine Realms...
Yeah.
on the map as a part of it, had to be there as part of the lore, but we're not going to see all of them at the moment. Did you find that strange? Well, did you like, oh, this well, is a DLC?
I found it frustrating. Find out
that there are Nine Realms, that blew my mind. Like, you know, because you're playing the game, you know, you're going along, you go around the lake, you know, you're like, okay, cool. Start going up the mountain, you're like, yep, okay, I see where this is going. And you go back down there and she's like, and there are Nine Realms. And you're like, what? Nine realms. Where are all these realms going to come from? What are we going to go do there? But then, yeah, I was disappointed you didn't get to see like Asgard and places like that.
And the fact that they put it there in front of you and go, no, you can't go there.
You can't get here.
Bad luck.
I loved the cheek about that whole thing, though. Just a bit of spunk that game devs need to do more of.
Yeah.
But I guess it showed Odin you has, part Odin of that larger sort of, I guess, universe sort of thing of like all those realms.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It is canon, I guess, for that world. So they couldn't just go, he's got nine realms on this thing. This tree can go to all nine. So they had to physically show it, but then to just only go to four. I'm like,
I know that they're probably going to keep the other ones until the next games, but I just think it would be interesting to get some DLC to access some of the ones that probably won't have a story impact, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like your Muspelheim and Niflheim in this game, you know, like Svartalheim, which was the realm of the dwarves, you know, like could that possibly hit us as a DLC? Do you think there'll be any DLC that'll open them up?
No, they said that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is a standalone experience.
Me too. I know it's good. I scream all the time for just give me a single player type experience, but I'm like, now you've done it. I want to.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's absolutely one of those cases where you get what you want and all of a sudden you want more of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We talk all the time about how frustrating it can be that these games are released and there's already 3 DLC packs planned of content that should have already been in the game. Yeah. You know? Yeah. But this is almost the opposite. It's like, okay, phenomenal game. Now give me more of that. I want more and I want it now.
What's it had to release the game but no Niflheim or the fireplace and kept that as DLC? Like, you know, you do everything else, but you don't go to those places. And they go, and now here's Niflheim with its mist challenge and the fireplace. Like, would he be like, it's okay?
Yeah, I probably would have been pissed off about it. I probably would have been pissed off about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I guess we probably should start wrapping this up, but there's so much we could talk about this for hours and hours. But we sort of mentioned a feeling we had last night on the Megacast. How I'm just not driven to play any games at the moment. Like, I finished God of War and I'm just like, wow, that was special. And me and Josh have both had this where we just like, I could play this, I could, but nothing, I feel almost like I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah, nothing's going to stand played. Up to it.
Have you guys had that at all?
Absolutely.
Not really. Paul? I've started going back and finishing a lot of stuff in my pile of shame at the moment, so I've rolled credits on like 4 things in the last week, and I'm like, okay,
oh nice.
I'm just sort of in that sort of mode, you know, when you get in that sort of right, let's get this shit done and get it out of the way for whatever reason. But then I did start another game today, and I was like, oh, you know, at the start I was just like, man, it's just nothing compared to what God of War is.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah, see,
Paul, you've had that same feeling.
I look, rolled credits on God of War, adored it. I've captured a few, captured a few games for coverage for the site, or I've, done reviews on certain bits and pieces. But to sit down and play a game just because I want to, say to clear the pile of shame, and there is one. There's a significant pile of shame there, and I just like I caught myself laying on the couch, and the wife looked over me. She said, "What's wrong with you? You're not really." She goes, "Do you want to play a game?" Like she'd kind of, "All right, fine. I'll step away from the TV to let you play." I go, "Nah, not really. Like just nothing's really striking my interest, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah,
outside of stuff that I've had to do for Player 2 purposes."
Yeah, exactly. It's a weird feeling. Like, I haven't had this about a game. I don't know when, to be honest. I can't think about a game that's affected me like this, where I've just gone, I'm still playing. Like you said, I'm doing stuff. I'm creating content for my Twitch and stuff like that. But it's the first time in a long time where my list of games I've played in the week before the MeCast was, I'm not really keen on anything.
Yeah, like one game.
It was only until this podcast where I really realised that, because it was, this was only about 3 or 4 days ago that I was kind of having this conversation at home, and I couldn't work out what it was. Like, I mean, I've been a little bit sick of late. My voice has been a little bit off. I thought, maybe I need some early nights, but then I'd go to bed and not necessarily want to go to bed straight away. And it was only, now speaking with you guys, and we've kind of been talking about it, I'm going, that's it. Like, the penny's just dropped, and I've realised it's because nothing in my head can compete with this yet.
Maybe Red Dead can.
Like, obviously, I'm going to get into the swing of things again at some point. But
right
now, I just there's no motivation to go and play anything just for the enjoyment of it, because I can't enjoy it like I did God of War.
Exactly.
I'll say it now. It's probably one of my favorite games of all time. Like I said, that moment, this that we're talking about right now, I can't think of any time that I've had that before in my life, and I've never been driven to finish a game and just get to the end and go, wow, and sit back and just... I had to message people straight away that I hardly knew anyone who had finished it, so Josh is like telling me that he's almost finished it. I'm like, just hurry up, I want to talk to you about
it. Let's talk.
And then Demuji in our USM's like, oh, you're finished, finally. I get to talk to someone about it. And we just sat there and talked about every single point of it.
I think that really shows the caliber of the work that they've put into it, regardless of the game, because the conversations that are coming from it and the feeling that it's giving people at the back end of it, just hats off to everybody that was involved in the development of this game. Just phenomenal.
Even the balls they had to go, okay, you've just finished the boss battle, now go slowly walk up another mountain.
Yeah.
Have a think about what you've done. And then walk back down again.
Think about your choices, guys.
Yeah. But I find it interesting, like, it's being like this massive exclusive and that. And then you still see like people that are like so Xbox orientated. They go, it just looks like another one of those, one of those games like Uncharted 4 or The Last of Us or whatever. And it's like,
The other amazing exclusives that are available.
I can certainly identify an age demographic for those people, if you'd like. I reckon I could probably guess they're between about 14 and 20.
I was thinking more an IQ demographic personally, but
I try to steer clear of that just because I'm a teacher professionally, so I'll focus on the age group and based on some of the anecdotal rubbish I hear sometimes. I won't stray into IQ lest I lose my job.
It's something special, and I do hope that if you haven't played it, you get out there and play it, and it's a must.
I just want part two.
I'm sad because I know that I'm looking at probably 3 to 4 years before we see it, and it probably, like, this is a saga that will go on over next generation.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, like, it's not like a movie where we get the follow-up next year or the year after. Like, it's...
Yeah. But imagine they just managed to do it, though, and go, right, God of War 2 here in 2019. Imagine that reveal at E3.
Yeah, imagine that reveal at E3.
They've had the whole second team working
on fucking bricks.
Yeah, this is definitely in 2021, but that would be incredible.
Oh, man.
Yeah, please surprise us. Please, gods, please.
I'm happy. Like, I don't know how. I feel like it's a game I'm going to play over again. I'm not driven to go back and 100% it, because just being in that world isn't sort of enough. I need to have the story driving me along.
Yeah, I did all the way up to that Queen Valk and went, I'm done.
Yeah, I did the Queen Valk. I finished the Queen Valk, and that was a hard fight. That was a pretty hard fight. And that's when I stepped back away from it. That's when I called it on the game. I think I'm like 67% or somebody thing, according to the PlayStation trophies. And that's when I've stepped back and said, okay, I'm done with that now. And that was an experience that I'm going to remember for quite some time, you know, but I can move on from it now.
Yeah, because I don't think it's the fight sequences that were dragging me along. It was definitely the story.
It was definitely the story.
And without that, it's just spam this button and do this move. Okay, clear that, do that puzzle, and then move on. I'm sort of sad that I didn't expand and do that stuff as I went along. I was so rushed to get through that story, but I wouldn't have finished it otherwise. I don't know. I don't have that much time in my life to put 50, 60 hours into this game. Mm. I'm happy with the 25 hours that I got it done. And I don't know. But yeah, I will hopefully play more of it down the track and hopefully do a replay and see little things like the Blades of Chaos at the start and things like that as we go through. Mm. Definitely not playing it on God of War mode, though.
I tried watching you guys stream that and I was like, oh my God, what a slog that is.
Well, Matt, my brother Matt, started it on that mode. And I think Demuji and Whip from the Discord started the same. And I remember talking to Matt and he was surprised because he got to when you first get to Alfheim. And you know, you that platform fight where the Dark Elves are coming at you before you go underground. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Before you first go into the temple there. So he got to that point and just like grinded against that fight on that platform for so long and finally gave up and started again. So that took him, I think he told me, he reckons it was about 9 hours, I think he said. It was about 9 hours of playtime to get to that point on God of War. He did that on the hardest level. He did that. He stepped down one level and did that same bit in about 2 hours and got to that point. It was like, what the... And then, you know, going back, you know, as he's playing the game further, just some of the boss fights and be like, how the fuck would you even do this on God of War?
I love that there is that mode in there, and good luck to anyone who does finish it on that.
Oh, imagine those fire challenges on that mode. Holy crap.
Oh, fuck. God. Yeah, the fire challenges, like where you've got to fight 100 people or even kill 20 people without being hit once.
Yeah.
No. Nooey in hell.
Is there any last bits you guys want to talk about before we finish this up?
My first experience opening that rift and getting one shot by the guy that walked out.
Yeah, those rifts got by the traveler or whatever.
Oh, those little purple rifts and you go, oh, what's this? And then like a level 6 guy walks out and you're like, what? Dead.
And just get cleaned up straight away. I mean, we should probably talk about the after credits
post
scene.
Credits, yeah, yep. Going home.
Oh yes, we forgot to go back there.
Yeah. Credits version 2 or something like that, you know. So where you basically go home and you sleep for, I don't know, months, I think it is. Isn't it? I think when you wake up it says several years later. And you walk out because there's a shit ton of thunder and then it pans down and you don't see, all you see is a leg and then you see Thor's hammer Mjolnir there.
Yeah,
and what do you think about that? Like, was it a good addition to the game and a good way to finish the game for you guys, or was it too much of a tease, or was it a bit of just a throwaway thing?
Outside of the Blades of Chaos, that was my number two moment. I was giddy with excitement when I saw that.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. It's a great way of just giving that tiny, tiny tease of part two. You know. Who your antagonist is probably going to be, Matt. And, you know, it was just cool just to see him there, see the hammer.
It was a very Marvel thing, really.
Yeah.
Now, I have been asked the question, I can't remember who it was from, but I have been asked the question, is do you think that is actually Thor, or do you think that might be Odin?
Nah, it's Thor.
That's
Thor.
You think it's Thor?
The hammer, it all fits.
You killed his two sons.
Yeah.
He's coming for revenge.
Well, and the
weather is, the everything they set up with that is Thor.
It's Thor. Yeah. And you think
now
it's,
is Thor? Do you think Thor was the one who talked to the snake?
That's the big unanswered question, really.
I don't think so, because aren't they meant to have this like massive rivalry? I would think
they're supposed to have a massive fight.
Yeah, I would think if Thor called him, then it would have just kicked off.
So who else can speak to the giants and made that call?
I reckon it was Freya.
Can she talk to giants? Yes, she's... No, because Thor's mother's a giant, but she's not a giant.
But also there was a response to what happened when whoever it was spoke to the world serpent. There was a response from the serpent. Things kind of changed and moved. The serpent would know that she's a god and probably wouldn't want anything to do with it, really.
Maybe it was Odin.
Maybe it was Odin.
I'd argue the same thing. Wouldn't want anything to do with Odin either, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's a strange one. If Thor couldn't kind of bend the
serpent to his will, I mean, Odin's an incredible force as well, but, you know, I'd suspect nothing's going on there either, so...
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's a weird one. No. But it could also be this whole time thing as well. They talk about these different, the different realms are working in different times and all those sorts of things, and maybe... someone has stepped out of one of these other times. It could get very messy. But
The only reason I went straight to Thor was because there was a whole heap of basically thunder in the sky, and the place changes very, very quickly. The world changes. Well,
really dumb question storms. For you. Like, yeah. do they say how Tyr dies, or why Tyr's not around anymore? And do you think that could have been Tyr?
I can't remember, like, there's the different strands of gods, essentially. I can't remember the actual names now, but he was kind of kicked out and killed, essentially.
Yeah, okay.
Him being one of the... putting it more Game of Thrones sort of style, he was one of the old gods, and the new gods came and killed him off.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking maybe that's a cover-up, and maybe Tyr's still out there.
Yeah, that was the only other thing I was about to bring up.
Still kicking around.
That'd be great. Do you think the giants are going to come back at the end, or in the next one, or...? That's the end of them.
Well, I think that'll be the end of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one left, so...
Yeah.
It's possible, I guess. Maybe there are others there and his presence inspires them in some way. I don't know. Mm. It's an interesting one.
Yeah. And it's just strange to get to that world and there'd be just dead giants everywhere.
Do you think the next game's going to start right where this one ended off with Thor at the front door?
No, because that was a dream. Atreus talks about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he goes, that was a dream, so it's just a sort of a premonition or whatever. That's why he didn't age in that as well, when it's supposed to be a couple of years down. So
perhaps that's part of his mum's kind of powers, I guess. Kind of...
What, like
infiltrating him, he's starting to channel those a little bit, potentially.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd imagine a flashback to kind of where we finished the game prior to the whole Thor thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a few months down the road or whatever.
I'd almost want to see it a couple of years down when Atreus has actually got some more...
A little bit older.
Older in the use of his abilities. He's more free and you can actually swap between the two characters rather than just sort of saying, hey, do this, do that. But I don't know how that would work with the one camera.
And I guess it's all dictated to by when Ragnarok actually arrives.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they said Ragnarok's not far away, didn't they? Yeah. So it has to sort of...
I just got to think to myself, for some reason, that I can't wait until Atreus has got the bow and the axe and the blades. I don't know why. That'd just be awesome, I think. All three of them. Because it'll happen at some point, I'm sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, adopting his dad's weapons, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because he sort of goes more into the shape-shifting sort of stuff with Loki, you would think. Mm. So where... the wolf that he summons
that's what Loki does, which was another that was another moment where they kind of tipped their hat to anyone who knew the mythology.
Yeah, I'm sort of sad that I didn't know the mythology going in, because I'm always going through it going, where is Loki? They're not mentioning Loki at all, not at all. And then at the end I'm like, oh duh, that's why they're not mentioning it at all. But that was a cool moment, like, and I literally sat back in my chair and just went, oh, so many questions. Oh, my God. There's so much unanswered now.
But is Kratos even his dad? I started thinking down that line.
I've got one enormous question out of the whole game, one that don't believe they answered. Why the hell is he there in the first place? How did he get there? Like, he fell off a cliff in Greece and, dropped off, whatever the hell he did. But they never explained how he got there.
He wanted to go retire.
That's somehow he skipped realms. That's the question.
He took a boat.
Did they say how?
I'm fairly sure they didn't. And that's one thing I really, really wished they'd answer. And I'm sure there's probably a reason for that. And I'm sure it'll reveal itself down the track. But that is gnawing at me something shocking.
Maybe that's part of how they change realms down the track.
Yeah. Maybe it's Tyr. Again, maybe Tyr did something. And that'll be explained further on. We're going to have to find out
Athena
more about
or whatever. Given that Athena's kind of there with you at the end of God of War 3, technically.
Yeah. I need to know more about the Norse mythology, to be honest. I really need to start looking into it. All I know is Marvel. That's unfortunately all
that's a worry.
Norse mythology, I know. I know. And all the way through it, I'm like, oh, Thor's actually a really, really bad person, from what I understand now. I didn't realize he was that bad.
But he's such a handsome Australian in those movies. Yeah. What the hell?
That's it. And he's so funny. Now I want to talk Avengers.
Where's Captain America?
Anyway.
Whoa, no Avengers spoilers here, guys. Come on.
Maybe we should call
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's all good. let's finish it up. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on. Is there one last thing you guys want to say about it at all?
Bring on 2021.
Yeah, bring on part two for sure.
Yeah, give me more.
Give me more. Cool. Okay, well, thank you guys for joining us. Like I said, where can people find you, Callan, and follow you and do all that kind of stuff?
We've got a website now, gametrainpodcast.com. So all our links and stuff is on there. So that's probably the easiest place to find everything in one go. Boom.
Yep. Sweet, done. And Paul, where can people find yourself?
Similar sort of fashion, player2.net.au. That's got links to all the video content as well as the written content that I do. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/player2au. So consider kicking a few dollars. There's some awesome tiers there.
That sounds pretty good. I'll need to look into that a little bit more with you. I am obviously Wilco's Chosen. You can find me at all those places. Josh, you are where?
Supermega Josh on Twitter and Discord. Come in. Excellent. Let's have a chat.
And all our content is at ultrasupermega.com.au. I've actually got our Discord in front of us right now. It's https://discord.gg/xvjrrpm. Use that.
Yeah, try and remember.
Or just
that.
Go to our community tab. It's right there on it as well. It's the easiest way. Or hit me up on Twitter. I've always wanted to use that because we always just say go to the community tab. So I actually had it open today. social@ultrasupermega.com.au is our email too if you have any feedback or thoughts or theories or anything we missed or got wrong. I know we said Greek mythology instead of Norse mythology a few times, but I apologize. We're tired. But until our normal programming comes back next week with episode number
85.
It's been great. We love you all. And thank you guys again for joining us tonight.
Yeah, we'll talk to
you all again soon.
Thanks for having me.
See you.